I'm just delighted to be here today with Kara and Lauren, whom I met at the conference in Olympia, Washington. It's about almost 2 weeks ago now. My goodness, time flies. So this episode will be of interest to people who are interested in this little corner of the internet or wanting to know what we mean by this little corner of the internet. And people who have been following maybe Jordan Peterson and John Verbeke and Paul Vanderclay for a while, and Jonathan Peugeot. And maybe you want to know what's up with all these people. Well, we got together for a conference in the woods in Olympia, Washington, a couple of weeks ago that was called Northwestuary 2024. And we're going to talk about what it's like to meet people in person that you've only ever met on the screen. And then what it's like to have a weekend like that, and maybe what the aftermath of it is, and all of that. So, to get us going, I'd like to have Kara and Lauren, you guys just introduce yourselves, tell a little bit about who you are and what you would like people to know about you, and then I'll ask you some questions about your experience there.
Cool. I guess since I said the first word, I'll introduce myself first. I'm Lauren, born and raised in Ohio. And so up until maybe about 3 years ago, did I move out to the Pacific Northwest. So currently living in Tacoma, Washington. And so yeah, that's I feel very Midwestern, like I feel my Midwesternness in the Pacific Northwest, but I've learned to enjoy some of the things that it offers. Yeah.
That's so interesting because I lived in Iowa for many years and I always thought of Ohio as East Coast.
I mean, it feel the thing is it feels like that as well. So I visited the East Coast a lot, and then I visited DC area, so it's like it feels familiar. So I can see that.
Yeah. So, Kara?
Yeah, I never know where to start with introductions. I'm a mom of a 6-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter, and yeah, I've been following Pajot and kind of branch off from there into this little corner. I've probably been following him for 5 or so years now. And yeah, pretty much born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm currently near Portland, Oregon area on the Washington side. So
Well, cool. So you both showed up at this thing without ever having been to a conference before. So you had never met any of these people in person,
correct.
right? So you walked in on Friday morning. I think it was a Friday, right? Friday morning, and you didn't know anybody there. You might have met some of them through online things, but for the most part, you this was. So, what was your impression, your first impression of walking into this thing?
Well, I had a warm welcome, kind of getting signed up. And actually, Karen, you, I think, signed in soon after me, and you actually gave me a hug. And it was a very warm welcome. I was surprised by it, but I don't know. It was a great kind of breaking the ice because I was definitely extremely nervous. Feel like I cleared out my bowels before coming in. I was that nervous. And then also like not soon after or not too much later, Raj had come up, and I think that's what his name was, but he had introduced himself and asked, why I ended up coming here and things like that. So I actually thought I was gonna be able to come in quite under the radar or for some reason, or just not be noticed because that's how I'm used to kind of walking in spaces. So it was a welcoming space pretty quickly.
Kara, what was your experience?
Yeah, it's kind of the same. I remember pulling into the parking lot and wondering if I had the right place because I think I was like the first person to pull in, which is not normal for me. I'm usually not the first person anyway. And so I came in, and there really, yeah, wasn't anyone else there yet. So I was able to kind of sneak in like I usually do. But my estuary leader came in and introduced himself. So that was good for me to have the kind of a moment to settle in and just be able to connect with the our leader and before things kind of got rolling, I guess.
Well, so people who are listening might wonder, what is estuary? Either one of you want to take a crack at that?
I mean, I'll try because when I came in, they were asking what I knew because I guess I didn't add like when moving out to Washington and getting connected with this space. Honestly, I've only heard of Paul Vanderclay. Not until recently have I even said the names for Vaiki or Peugeot. I should have practiced in front of the mirror, so hopefully I pronounced their names correctly. Yeah, just very new. So as far as estuary, from what I could get a sense of it, it's like a space where people come to share what's on their mind, whether it's like practical things or spiritual things or just things that they're thinking about that impact their world or the world to come. And through those discussions, people can learn more or even be transformed by discussion and connection. So
Wow, can we use that on our marketing material? So what did you think you were getting into when you showed up at this thing? I mean, Nate did a good job on the promotional materials, but for someone who'd never been to one of these before, they probably didn't have a very clear idea of what was going to happen. Do you have anything to say about that, Kara? Had you already talked with people about this and had some kind of idea of what was going to happen, or?
No, I actually felt a little bit bad because I was just so excited to be there and be with that particular group of people who were there for those particular people and the whole group dynamic that I kind of didn't take time to really think about what the estuary group was, like what made it an estuary. And 'cause I mean I've followed Paul a little bit, Paul Vanderclay, and I knew of estuaries. I just had never, sat down and thought about, oh, this is the estuary protocol. And I didn't really spend much time thinking about that part of the dynamic. But it's so simple. I didn't feel like I needed to spend any time thinking about it ahead of time. I could kind of just jump in and go, but
So I think that's one of the things that made this conference different than a lot of other conferences, that rather than getting right into having speakers up there or panels or something like that, the first event was an estuary meeting. So before anything else started, you were each in a group of probably 7 or 8 people. Were you together in the same group?
We
Yeah.
were.
Oh my goodness. Oh, okay. So we're going to get only one point of view on this then. So they split everybody. There were like 75 people there. They split everybody up into a number of different groups. And so there were 7 or 8 people in each group. Each group has a sort of a facilitator who just helps the protocol to operate. And we did part one of the protocol before we went in and heard any speakers. And part one is just basically getting introduced, getting everybody introduced. So that was part one. And then after some of the speakers, then we got together again. And I calculated, and I think altogether we had five estuary meetings, probably with a total of more than 8 hours of being together with that same group of people. So you kind of get to know your group pretty well. And it's not too hard to remember names and faces and call them up whenever you want to think about it again. And because every group is talking about a different topic, then that gets people thinking about a lot of different things, even before we listen to the speakers. Yeah. So what was the topic that was on everybody's mind in your group?
I mean, there's a lot of different things. Well, I'll at least share the ones that I eventually shared because I didn't wasn't ready to like even provide any thoughts that I have, because I'm not used to sharing things often. I eventually shared, well, got a chance to talk about how to make friends or just build connection when a lot of people are transient in certain stages. Talked about creativity and AI and a little bit of music as well. Those are the ones that I could at least touch on because a lot of stuff was a little over my head, but I still felt connected in a way. So I definitely want Kara to share some of those other things that we enjoyed talking about. Yeah.
Sorry, Lauren. I think a couple times my brain went off into like really obscure this little corner of the internet places. And one thing I absolutely loved about having you there was that you were able to bring it kind of back down into a fresh perspective that is easy to lose, I think, when you've been thinking about really niche things for a long time. But our group talked a lot also just about the relationship between beauty and suffering. And I thought that was a really great way to keep the conversation connected, kind of almost at like at every level, because I mean we can talk about AI and all kinds of high level things, I guess, but if they're not connected down to kind of our daily lives and the things that are very relevant to us on a personal level, then they aren't going to be meaningful to each other or ultimately to ourselves in our own experiences either. So it was really, I just really loved having a mix of people in that group that were kind of in different places, but we could still bring ideas together through the lens of beauty and suffering and transfiguration. So,
And was your group mostly guys?
It was almost half. I mean, when Jess's wife joined us, so there was three women,
Okay.
out of six of us, seven. Yeah, somewhere around there.
Well, they really stacked it with the ladies.
Our group was
Was
lucky.
awesome. Yeah, it was good.
So when you walked into the auditorium and you saw that that was mostly guys, how did that feel? Did you feel secure? Did it feel a little bit strange? Was it awkward?
I mean, I maybe a little disorienting, but I think I was already kind of feeling that way because outside of, I guess, being a woman, it's like I'm also have only like touched the surface of TLC, and really didn't know anybody but Paul Vander Klay. And then also, yeah, so I guess how I felt, not quite off-putting. I did work on a military base with active duty soldiers for a while, so there have been some spaces where it's been like that. But I will say it was nice to see other women there. Yeah, so I didn't feel fearful or afraid or anything like that coming into it. But I mean, I did notice it. I'll say that.
I was so excited to be there, honestly, that I didn't think about it. And then when I kind of looked and saw that it was just pretty much men, guys, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. I should have expected this. But I didn't mind. Like it was exciting to be a part of the group where these, yeah, I just this felt like very much a lot of brotherly energy. And that it wasn't awkward at all for me because people there were, I think, pretty engaged with whoever they were with, and they were, meeting the people that they've talked to for years for the first time in person, and it was a good dynamic for me to be around. I think it was really comfortable for me.
Well, so Carrie, you've been hanging around the corner a little bit longer than Lauren. So how did you get into this space? And I mean, what was your path? And then what aspect of the corner have you kind of been hanging out in up to this point?
So being from the Portland area, I think I guess I could trace this all the way back to my Tim Mackey, was probably the first person to take me out of the Reformed theology bubble that my mind had been in, and kind of step me towards understanding the way that biblical narratives work and patterns, and how that works just through like the Hebrew Bible. And going from there, I eventually warmed up to like the Theopolis Institute, Alistair Roberts, Peter Lighthart, and the way that they talk about biblical theology and also focus on narrative patterns and things like that. Once I was comfortable with that, so somewhere in there, I had landed on a Pajot video, and I was like, what is this, guys? This is really interesting, but kind of weird. And so, but after I had kind of gone down that road long enough, I came back to Pajot and was able to fully engage with his content, and was just really excited to learn about the way that he views symbolism, especially through more of a creative lens. And yeah, from there, I've just branched out. He's, good about interviewing different people. Then I'll spend some time on each kind of little channel that I find from him. And yeah, I really like your channel, Karen, because you put together all the people that I really want to see talk to each other, and
Oh.
it's like super exciting. I'm like, oh yes, Karen did it again. So
Did you happen to see the one that published yesterday or today? Is it today? The Michael Bull one on the
oh,
biometrics?
I saw you
Because
post that.
he's associated with the Theopolis Institute. Yeah.
I was excited to see that. Yeah, that's definitely on my to watch list.
Well, the to watch list gets way too deep. So, Lauren, how did you stumble onto Paul Vander Klay?
Yeah, so I guess a shorter-ish story. I had, and people asked me this when I went there, and honestly, I didn't know I had to answer it because I never really felt like when I first came upon it that I was like stumbling into something that I would get into, but I did get a chance to think about it more, and it started out with watching a YouTube video on Godzilla and Oppenheimer. So there's the chance. I know it's a weird start, but
Was that a Paul Vanderclay video? I'm not.
no.
Oh.
So it was the YouTube, his YouTube channel. Actually, the YouTuber, his name is Paul Act Two, but his YouTube name is Deep Talk Theology. And
Oh,
so,
Paul Anleitner.
yes,
Yeah.
yeah. And so, I watched that and I thought that was interesting. So I kind of kept tabs on the videos that he would upload. And eventually he uploaded a video with, I think, Brandon Graham Dempsey talking about meta modernism. And I thought that was, it sounded interesting, even though I didn't, again, didn't know much what they were talking about. But I ended up looking up Brandon Graham Dempsey, just to see if there are other videos on it. And he featured or had a conversation with Paul Vanderclay. And so from there, I kind of looked at like, who is this person doing this interview? And I ended up watching some other randos, and I really connected with those, or those captured me a lot. I liked
Those are my
listening.
favorites too.
Yeah, I really enjoy just listening to people talk about themselves and about their lives. And I think Paul modeled well how to listen and ask questions. And I think one specific one, he was, I think his like preaching mode came in a little bit, and he ended up like praying for this person at the closer to the end of the video. And I don't know, I just remember tearing up at that random conversation. So from there I was like, oh, let me look at others. And so from there kind of watched more randos. I enjoyed some of the Freddie and Paul show, and enjoyed Dog Barks, the singing as well. So some of the songs are like songs that I grew up on or sang. So I grew up in a Oneness Pentecostal church, Black church in Columbus, Ohio. So I'm not currently going to that type of church living out in Washington, but I don't know, it seemed familiar. And so after that, just I guess hearing other things, and I had time on my hands, I just felt like the conversations or things that he would connect to were interesting. So that's been maybe like 4 or 5 months now. So haven't watched a whole lot, just when I can, but there was one video where he mentioned Olympia, and I was like, oh, I live close to there. So honestly, the motivation was like, if I could get time off, and just the fact that if I can afford it, knowing that I can drive down there, I was like, yeah, why not?
So, what was your overall experience? I mean, now that you've had time to reflect on it, do you feel like you have a kind of handle on what might have? It's hard to put into a question. What might have kind of started generating there? You know, did something get started there that's still working in you?
That's a good question. I would say, I know I was looking for some type of connection. I mean, I don't know if it would branch out past the event, but like That's definitely something that I've been struggling with. And even though I wasn't looking for a therapy session or anything like that, just the practice of connecting. So even though I don't know if I quite feel like I belong or fit in this space completely, I definitely felt seen, which was something that I felt the effect of that later on. And also, even though there was a plenty of people a lot smarter than me, I felt like even in the estuary, they took me seriously and didn't dismiss the things I shared, or I didn't feel like it was trivial per se. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely seen, but also being asked a lot of questions made me want to learn how to talk about myself more honestly or truthfully. So it's like I shared what maybe the narrative that I talk about myself often. And so I would say afterward, I've reached out even to my mom to help me rebuild some of the narrative that I've given myself that probably isn't as whole as it could be.
Well, that's a very meaningful thought. Yeah, I think I've had that experience too, just by that feeling of being seen. Having people listen long enough to where you feel like they really understand what's happening inside you makes you want to be able to explain it even more clearly, more truthfully. And I've had that experience of building a shorthand picture of myself so that it's easy to talk about, but then it doesn't get at what's really there. Right. So, yeah, I can totally feel that. So, what about you, Kara? Did you feel like anything got started because of the time you were there?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just a funny side note, I guess. I can usually tell when something's really sunk in at a pre-verbal level, I guess. At a deep level that I haven't processed through yet, when my use of language changes unexpectedly. I do this weird thing. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes things will come out of my mouth that are not real words, or they surprise me. I was talking to my mom about a comment from someone from the group that I had seen online. And what came out of my mouth instead of comment was commonant. And I was like, oh, there it is. That's the thing that happens. Anyway, so I feel like this whole time I've been really processing the whole experience was so intense. For me especially, I think. I don't know if I've ever actually felt as seen anywhere as I did there. And I don't think I've ever been met where I was at so thoroughly anywhere. I do tend to be a bit of a on the fringes of things, and I'm just used to that kind of an experience. But yeah, I mean, I can't even exactly say why, but I feel like everyone there understood me in a way that I don't usually have the experience. I just don't have that experience of connection anywhere else. It may be in different ways, but there's just something really special about it. I feel like everyone there was fully present with me when they were talking, and even though there was a lot going on, there was something about the atmosphere overall, that was not something I could really put into words or something that could have been translated through video. And, you know, by the end of it, you know, you really, it's a really a special kind of an experience when you can look someone in the eyes and only need to say a few words, and they know that what needs to be said back can only be said through a hug, you know.
Wow. So that's hard to think about. That so then you go home and you're not there anymore. You've had this experience of having been seen. Have you thought about where, how to look for that opportunity in your current space, I mean your current community? Or does it come down to we just have to be the change wherever we are? I mean, that's what I don't really know, because I did hear people say, gee, I wish church was like this, right? I wish church was like this. But maybe church can't ever be like that if there aren't people who already understand how to see people and then go to church and then see the people who are there so that they can feel seen and so kind of get things rolling. I mean, or are there other places besides church that can provide this kind of really deep communion?
It could be a mixture of things. I know I have the tendency of just wanting to be hidden. So I don't almost want to share myself for, you know, variety of fears, I guess. But so in Ohio is like where like my family is at, where people saw me grew up, where a lot of my friends are from. And so then moving to Pacific Northwest, the culture is very different. And also trying to connect as an adult. I will say there has been a family that's kind of adopted me. And so there are ways where I've been able to at least attend like different events. But it's like always having to renew that connection, at least within a church space. So I did make some connections, but a lot of folks have kind of left. And now, kind of in this space, I'm learning how to rebuild new ones. And so I feel like at least post this event, I tried to reach out to those that I've just met in passing. And even if those hadn't really panned out, I feel like at least this event let me know that I'm capable or worth being seen in a way. So in that sense, we're maybe a little bit more resilient in that way, when maybe most of the time I'm not. I guess that's kind of always fighting for that connection. I'm not usually on social media anyway, so there's that extra push of like there's not it's harder for me to make connections online. Yeah, I'm not really tech savvy or social media savvy. So I feel like, yeah, just gotta go out there and pray and hope and still go out there with some form of expectation.
And meet real people.
Yes, yeah.
So what about you, Kara?
I made some really great connections there that have been able to carry over to the rest of my life, hopefully. a little bit in different ways. So I know, Lauren, I'm
Yeah.
excited to get to go hiking with you eventually here.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, this is it's been super encouraging in that way. I get At one point, I kind of felt myself towards the end of the conference doing this thing where I'm like, okay, yeah, like, of course I'll get your number, but like, I know, like, we both know we're never actually gonna hang out because, and I caught myself, and I think, you really helped me there. Thank you. And you're like, no, like, when's a good time? Like, I understand you're busy, and so, I appreciated that. Yeah. I think I've been really encouraged to step out a little more with the social circle I do have as well. I've been encouraged to take some more steps with a creative project I've been working on. I'm hoping to get that going at my church as a little kind of test group. And I brought up the group, the estuary group, to my son's best friend. We were on like a little play date, and so his dad is a priest, an Anglican priest that's in the same diocese as Nate's, and Father Joe, who was there. I didn't get to meet. Someone said I needed to meet him, and I didn't get to. So I'm hoping to get an estuary group started here in Vancouver, long story short. And I think that that would be really, really cool to see happen here locally.
So, how far is Vancouver from Portland?
Oh yes, I'm in Vancouver. Well, it depends on traffic. It's a 5 minute drive over the bridge, but some days it's like an hour.
Oh, okay. Well, because my older daughter, actually, her moving truck just pulled in today
Oh,
in
cool. Yeah.
Portland. Yeah.
I'm
And,
so excited to connect.
but she's going to be living in the, what is that area called? Hawthorne, in the Hawthorne area of
Oh,
Portland.
yeah.
And she got herself a one bedroom apartment there and drove the moving truck up by herself. So quite a
Wow.
deal, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know I put you two in touch, so hopefully you can talk more, especially about church kind of things.
I really like that.
Yeah. So do you guys have any questions?
I don't know. Well, I'll just ramble until maybe a question comes up, but I will say I did appreciate your talk and presentation. There was at least something that at least resonated with me. So growing up, I thought myself as like, oh yeah, I'm creative. And like most kids, they kind of lose that as they get older. And just at least a small part about working on a blank canvas in a sense of like how intimidating that can be, and just like starting or putting something there can help form or get you started in a way. So I guess of course you said more than that, but just translating that to my hate relationship with perfectionism, and particularly the version of like starting and being okay with failing. I really, it's like unless I'm good at it right away, or it turns out really well right away, do I ever want to move past it? So, I guess always hearing that message is good, in whatever kind of steps I want to take myself in that's uncomfortable. So does that mean it might be creative at some point again? I don't know. I think I'm getting closer to saying yes, but it's like I'm still afraid. But
There's this great little book called Art and Fear. I don't know if I talked about that in the talk or
I
not.
think you didn't mention it.
So that book actually says that if you have those struggles, those feelings of fear and inadequacy, that probably proves that you are an artist. But I mean, my personal feeling is that everybody is an artist of some stripe, because we're made in the image of God, and He's a creator, a creative God. And so there's got to be something creative about each one of us, but the creativity might be a different kind of thing. You know, like Nate is a creative barbecue guy and also creative with ideas. And some people are creative painters, and some people are creative dancers or musicians or cook or poet. You know, there's all kinds of ways to express creativity. And I know, Carrie, you have this project. Why don't you talk about your project just a little bit?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I am putting together a little online course, and it is for parents or caregivers and children to connect through a series of creative projects that actually walk through the creative process as laid out in Genesis 1 through each of the creation days. Each project focuses on one of the themes, and by the time the series is finished, you have like a little you've created some kind of space. And so it could be like a reading nook. You can use it for whatever you choose, but it has like a little canopy and a rug for the waters above, waters below. And yeah, so all the projects, they build on each other. And it's a way for parents and kids to connect in a way that is hopefully going to scale through the rest of their lives. I know, at least for me as a mom, I get really overwhelmed about where to start if I feel like things are just sort of out of sync in some capacity. And sometimes it's most helpful just to start with play and to start with getting back to the basics of, creating together and how that kind of is fractally relevant. And so it's going to be an introduction to the concept of cosmic geography for those who aren't familiar with it. And it's also going to I think be relevant to anyone, even if they've been following Pageau for a long time. So.
That sounds really great. Cosmic geography. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yeah,
that
just the idea
that
of,
something Jonathan teaches about, or did you get that someplace else?
I might be using that phrase from maybe a, I don't know, that might have been a pre-Jonathan use of the word, but just the idea that the whole world is a macrocosm, and then how we have microcosms that are fractally related to each other. And so the pattern that you see in Genesis 1, when God creates the whole cosmos, is also the pattern that we can use to look at ourselves and our own families and our own communities, and to find those connections that are already sort of just waiting to be put together.
I love that, taking these ideas that are so up here, right, and bringing it down into something very practical and very beautiful that's going to unite families and really build hope in those children, because they're going to have a good relationship with their parents through this project, and that's going to carry on into the future. I mean, that's very beautiful. super excited. I hope you can get the ball rolling.
Thank you. Me too. And the secret with it actually is that kids typically already see the world this way, through that kind of enchanted lens. And so the magic of it, with it actually is that parents can hopefully catch some of that through the eyes of their kids as well.
It kind of reminds me, I think this might be a little bit off the beaten track, but one of the things Jordan Peterson talked about one time was how if we want to, our children can rewrite our memories or kind of recast our brains. And he told this story of how he could walk down the street in his neighborhood when he was a child. Every house on that street was magical. It was just like an enchanted castle. And he was enchanted with every shutter and every window and the doorknobs, and he noticed everything. But as an adult, they were just houses because he'd been down that street many times. And so that's a house and that's a house. And maybe they're a different style, but it's a house. But if you walk down that street again with a child, the child is like, "Oh, mommy, look at that shutter. Look at how pretty that bird's nest is. It's up by the front door, you know, or look at that roof." And I remember one time when I was, I might have talked about this at the conference. I was in bed. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning, and my daughter comes running in the room, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." What a sweetheart. "You have to look, just look out the window." And I looked out the window, and the sunlight was glancing on the roof across the way in such a way that it was making this beautiful golden flame kind of going across the edge of the roof. And she said, "Mommy, that's the way heaven is going to look." She was so excited, you know. And as a parent, you're so tired and you just want to say, "Go and leave me alone," you know. And yet here's this magical moment that you don't ever want to ruin for any reason whatsoever, you know. So you wake yourself up and you take a look. And that's kind of the way I feel about this little corner, is that getting to know people here is kind of like waking up and taking a look, to really see people, see, you know, like Jordan Peterson says, if you really listen to somebody, every single person is fascinating. There's something deeply beautiful about every single human being. And that has kind of awakened me again to that whole truth. And of course, Paul is such a good model of that, the way that he talks to people and gets them to open up and share, gives us some of the tools to use in order to be able to multiply that effort wherever we go. So,
Have you been to other estuaries, like, or
yes,
conferences?
about a year and a half ago, maybe. Yeah, I think a year ago, May, there was one in Chino, California. And so that was a pretty easy flight for me. I just flew down to Ontario, which is kind of in the LA area. And I had a really neat opportunity because Sevilla King also has a channel in the corner that's called Equality Existence, where she talks about the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. She's focused strictly on that book for several years now. So every episode is some thought that she has about that book. And so she and I have talked many times. I had a chance to room with her at that conference. So that was awesome. That was a lot bigger one. There were probably 200, 250 people at that one. Because John Verbaeke, Jonathan Peugeot, and Paul Vanderclay were the main speakers. And then John Van Donk was there. He's the guy who came up with the Estuary Protocol. So those four guys were the main speakers. And we had a wonderful estuary group. I was in an estuary group with Sevilla and eight guys that were single. And what they wanted to talk about almost the whole time was, how can we find a wife? Because we want to get married. We want to be a husband and a father. And so many of the young women nowadays are just not interested in going that route. Now, do you find that in your age group that the young women are not interested in marriage and family?
I mean, I'm a millennial, a younger millennial. But I've found, well, I would say maybe it's slightly different. So I'm around Black women more so. And so I think culturally, like there's a desire to get married, but it's usually either doesn't happen or it happens a lot later in life. So, as far as the ones that I'm around, most of them would like to get married, but not very maybe optimistic that it may happen or happen soon, I guess. So I don't know if it's, yeah, that might just be. And then I also have some women who had gotten married younger, but either through just their divorce, most of them didn't prefer it. Just a lot of issues. But so there's friends in that camp that I have. So ones that are unmarried and want to, some that were gotten divorced but still have that desire to be married. So maybe a little different than the main culture, I think. But yeah, there is some desire there. And I guess I could speak for myself too, I guess, but I don't know if I'm part of the corner yet, but it's like, yeah, I have that desire, never been married, but I don't know. I have yet to process through that fully out loud.
Well, I mean, we talked a lot about what could, how could the church get involved in making this happen? Because probably there are a lot of young single women that would like to be married at some church, and then over here there's a lot of young single men at some other church that would like to be married, but they're never going to meet each other because they're two different denominations, or you know, they just don't have activities where they would meet each other. So how could pastors like get together and say, hey, let's have some events, you know, let's have four events a year or something, a festival, and just invite all the single people. And a few years ago, my husband and I got involved with square dancing. Just for something to do, we wanted to be a little bit more active, and it was super fun, super, super fun. And there were a few young people there, but mostly it was people even that were a lot older than we are. And we got to talking to them, and they said they had been coming to this same club for like 50 years. And most of them had met their spouses at the square dance club 50 years before when they were in their 20s. Because back then, that square dance club used to have 500 members. Now it's down to like 40, right? But when there were 500 people going out and dancing square dance in every neighborhood, you betcha people were meeting. You know, because the thing about square dance is you have to hold everybody's hands. Even the men have to hold hands with the men sometimes, you know, which is a little weird, but you get used to it. You're holding hands all night long, so it's more of a feeling of we are all humans together. It's a very interesting feeling to be involved in that. And then the caller is calling. You have to memorize 139 steps in order to get to where you can listen to all the calls and follow all the calls. So it takes probably 3 months of training to learn how to actually dance square dance. And by the time you get done, you just feel so accomplished, like, wow, I can do this, you know? And then it's once you learn it, then it's just fun. And then they have three or four events every week. And it's a very social kind of thing. Eventually, we stopped doing it because we just didn't have that much time. But for the people who are like looking for community, it's a terrific way to find community. But I know young people just probably wouldn't even think about it anymore because it sounds so old hat, you know?
I don't know the answer to that question, other than I think, yeah, there are some women who don't see men as human. I think Yeah, sometimes how they talk about men is not, I don't know, not very kind. And so, yeah, I could see that there's some distrust in that and just learning how to relate to one another. I don't know if I can say again. I don't know if it hasn't been that way, but yeah, to view them, yeah, as cool and complex, other than statistics or kind of what they hear or short clips on red flags or kind of things like that. I don't know. Kara, you want to jump in?
I'm just thinking about that. I think there's something really valuable to that. I think the way people meet matters. I think that really sets the lens through which everything, the whole way you get to know someone can kind of work out. And yeah, I think dance is probably one of the best ways to do that. And it, I mean, just historically, yeah, like Karen was saying, I mean, there's a reason why we used to do that. It's something I think we could bring back. Yeah.
That just generated a memory for me. The first time I ever met my husband, I didn't think of him as a potential date, and I don't think he thought of me as a potential date. But it was an event that our church had done with all the singles. Maybe they had invited one or two other churches. I'm not sure because there were quite a few people there. Maybe there were 100, maybe 50 men, 50 women, something like that. And they had rented out a hall on a Valentine's night and hired a couple to come and teach us ballroom dancing. And the way they did it is they set up two circles, a circle of men and a circle of women. And then the circles would rotate opposite each other. So you'd get a different partner every time the circle moved. You'd end up with a different partner. So nobody had to worry about being asked or not being asked, right? Everybody got to dance. And she taught us four or five different dances that night. So at one point, as the circles are moving, I ended up with George, my husband, and he was wearing a tuxedo. He was the only guy there in a tuxedo. And at first, I thought, well, that's a little odd. What's he doing here in a tuxedo? Red cummerbund and all, right? But I also noticed that he was, when you're dancing, the man has to make a frame with his arms. And that frame is what gives the woman stability and guides her in the steps so that she can follow the steps. And he was the only one that could make a strong frame. Everybody else is kind of wimpy. He had this strong frame. So I really noticed him. But at the same time, he's a lot younger than I am. So I didn't think he was a potential at all. And then later we met under other circumstances when we were working in a ministry together. And that's when we started dating. But that was a terrific thing too, that whole ballroom dance thing, and giving everybody an opportunity to participate. And I don't know that any other couples were made that night, but and I understand what you're saying, Lauren, about a lot of women feeling that men are the enemy. And I wonder if that's partly because, well, first of all, the media, the TV and Netflix and all that, they always make the men look like monsters. I mean, and in the news, you only hear about the bad guys. And so that sticks out all the time. Years ago, we didn't have 24-hour news. Now we have 24-hour news assaulting us and news on all the social media platforms. And so there's all this stuff all the time about rapists and robbers and physical assault, and so that's sort of top of mind for people. So maybe they're afraid, just afraid.
Yeah.
I know it has to be really hard for young single women nowadays, you know. I recognize that. But when you hang around with these guys from estuary, you get a new appreciation for what manhood is all about, I think. Because they are also genuine and thoughtful and kind and good listeners and
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's one of the things that stood out to me also was just how authentic it all was. I mean, I don't think anyone was, it didn't feel like anyone was there for reasons that could have impeded connection. For whatever reasons, people typically might show up to an event. Like, I felt like everyone was there so intentionally to connect in an authentic way that they couldn't anywhere else for whatever reason. So.
Well, so any last words, ladies?
I don't, well, I guess if people do end up watching it, like those who are in our estuary group, just again, thank you guys for, yeah, again, making me feel maybe naked but unafraid. So, yeah, it was just a great space. Yeah, so appreciative to Corey and Grim Grizz and Brian and Jess and his wife. So, yeah, because they were most of those touch points, and definitely feel like God was in the midst. I feel, yeah, slowly kind of transformed by it, which I was not expecting. So yeah, I felt like I needed to be there, even for myself. I don't know necessarily for others, but I'm glad I came.
Glad you came too.
I'm glad you came to learn.
Yeah.
And I echo that. Yeah, thank you. If anyone does watch this, thank you for me, yeah. Holding space, holding sacred space.
Well, it was a complete delight to meet both of you in person, and it's also fun even seeing you on here. So I hope
Yeah.
we can talk again sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Thank you, Karen.
Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.